Okay, today's daf is daf kuf vav. We left off in daf kuf hey amid beis. Just one quick point from yesterday. I was talking yesterday about, we mentioned how the Gemara spoke about if a person's holding something on their head, they can't be holding something of a certain size on their head if they're wearing tefillin at the same time. And there seem to have been two deos in the Gemara about what the size of the item that you can't hold on your head is. So one opinion in the Gemara was that it has to be something that's arba'as kavin. And then we had the Beis Shila said, even mitpacha shalahen, even something that's just like a cloth, something that's not very heavy at all. So we pointed out that it seems like the two deos are arguing, yet the Rif quotes both deos. So the implication is that that the Rif holds that they're not arguing. And in fact, we pointed out that the Ramah explains how it could be that they're not arguing. And the Ramah's mechalik as follows, that there's a difference between a something that's meant to be put on your head and something that's not meant to be put on your head. If it's something that's meant to be worn like a hat, it's meant to be put on your head, so then you have up until Arba'as Kavin. If it's larger than Arba'as Kavin, no good. If it's something that's not meant to be put on your head, then afil mitpachas shalahen. Then even, or as Tosfos says, gears afil mitpachas shalechem. Then even a cloth on your head would not be okay if it was not meant to be put on your head. So I was perplexed yesterday by what exactly we mean by dalet kavin, how we measure a shear of dalet kavin. Generally, I assume kav is a measure in volume. So are we talking about a large borsalino on your head the same time you're wearing your tefillin? Is that going to be a problem because it's more than four kavin? So I just wanted to clarify that point because I left myself confused and a few other people as well. The Ramah writes in Simon Mem Aleph in Or Chaim, and there's only one sif in Simon Mem Aleph, he writes, Imu masui kaved arba'a kavin, vatfilin nidchakos tzarech la'asiran. If the burden on the head is four kav heavy, it's a weight, it's not a volume, so it's not an issue of the size of the hat that you put on your head. The Ramah holds that anything, even if it's meant to be put on your head, but if it weighs more than dalet kavin, you're not allowed to have it on your head the same time as your tefillin. So how do we define what's exactly arba'as kavin? How do we define exactly what's too heavy to be put on your head? Says the Mishnah Brura. So the Ramah says, if the tefillin are nidchakos, if the tefillin are pushed, so says in Mishnah Brura, ein perusho shatfillin zazen mimakom legamri. It doesn't mean that the tefillin are totally pushed out of their makom, out of the place where they belong, vein munachin kadin, to the point where you're not yotzei the mitzvah of tefillin because they're not put on your head properly, like they're all the way down here or something like that, or they're pushed to the side. The b'zeh pshita sha'aser, v'afilu masan kal, because that's obvious it's aser. Obviously, if you're going to wear something on your head that's going to cause you not to be yotzei the mitzvah of tefillin, so of course that's no good. Elo rotzu lomar shemunachin b'mekomen b'dochak, machmas ha'masui shemunach aleyem u'mekatzeres mekomam. Seems to be saying if the place where the tefillin can be kept is limited because of what you're wearing on your head, and it's sort of like brushing up, pushing up against it, so that the tefillin don't have any room to, you know, there's makom yesh parosh laniach shnei tefillin. Tefillin are supposed to have a little bit of room where it could be a little bit off, and you're still yotzei the mitzvah of tefillin. But if the item that you have in your head is holding it in one place where it's mekatzer es mekomam, it makes the makom of the tefillin much smaller, so that would be a problem. So l'chora, if you think about it, forgetting the weight of the head, that shouldn't just have to do with the weight, it should have to do with the size also, because if the size knocks off a whole bunch of space where the tefillin could go, so l'chora, that should be a problem. So based on that alone, it would seem that what we do in every yeshiva in the world, pretty much, you know, where Bachrim wear the hat on top of the tefillin, would sound like a problem, which is unbelievable. But then the Mishnah Berurah quotes, V'abach mekel b'inyin zeh b'mitznefes v'kova, that the Bach disagrees with this Ramah. The Bach holds that anything that's meant to be worn on your head, doesn't care how big it is, obviously as long as it doesn't push the tefillin out of a place where you could be yotzei, the Bach is going to be mekel. So I would assume that that's what the entire world is somech on, is the Shitas HaBach that's quoted in the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, we left off at the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Hayam and Beis. Says the Mishnah, Mekabel Sada Mechaveram, if a person is, again, all these Mishnayos we had seen previously in the Gemara are either about a situation of Arisos / Kablanos, the Rishonim use different words, so it means the same thing, Arisos, or about a situation of Chakranos, where a person is choker in a sada where you pay a rental fee for the field, either in bushels or in cash, and the rental payment is not in any way tied into what the field produces. And we have to figure out what each Mishnah is talking about. It's we're talking about one or the other. It's not talking about both. Says the Mishnah, a person is mekabel field from his friend, and it gets eaten by locusts, or it gets wind blasted, it gets destroyed by the wind. Immakas medinihi menakalo min chakuro. Okay, so it's pretty evident which one this Mishnah is talking about. It says min chakuro. If it's makas medina, meaning it's a plague that strikes not just your field personally, but it's something that's a communal issue. It's a communal problem that affects many fields. So we'll see how many. But menakalo min chakuro. Then you can say that you're not going to pay the full rent because you were paying the rent. The rental agreement was based on the idea that the field was going to be able to produce like a certain amount, and because it's of no fault of your own, nor of any mazel of your own, but it's just a general mazel that's affecting everybody, it's not able to produce that much, so you're able to deduct from the rental payment. Im eina makas medina, ein menakalo min chakuru. But if it's not something that affects the broader public, it only affects you, so we can assume it's your mazel that brought that about, and it's not a broader plague, and therefore you cannot deduct from the rental payment. You have to abide by that agreement. This concept of the broader mazel versus the individual mazel is quoted by Poskim in a totally different context as well. The Gemara tells us that that there are certain people you're not supposed to name after. When you name a child, that the Gemara says Shem Rishaim Yirkav, that the names of Rishaim should rot, and you're not supposed to use names of Rishaim. But beyond that, the post can point out that you're not supposed to name after someone who's Reya Mazale, who has bad mazel. Someone in Rahman al-Islam dies at a very young age, no children, something like that. So you don't name after someone like, unless you add a name, a more cheerful name to the name. You add a Chayim, a Bracha, something like that to make the name a little bit different, to give a little Bracha to the name. But generally speaking, you don't name after someone who's Reya Mazale. So a lot of the poskim right after the Holocaust had to deal with the issue, can you name after people who were murdered in the Holocaust? People who were murdered at a very young age, didn't have children, never had. No one's going to name after them if not their own family, who's the Sheris HaPleita, who's able to name after them. So this exact chilik of a makas medina versus an individual mazel is pointed out by the poskim, that if you have someone, when do we say it's Reya Mazalei? I think Rav Moshe writes this in the Tshuva. I'm not sure if it's Rav Moshe, but I think Rav Moshe might write this in the Tshuva, that when do we say that it's Reya Mazalei, that it's my own personal mazel? It's when it happens to me. And it doesn't happen to anybody else. So then it's my mazel. But if it happens to the ganze Welt, it happens to everybody, so then you can't say it's that person's mazel or that person's mazel. That's just something that's a plague that's hitting everybody. So that's the same chilik that this Mishnah is making. When can I say that it's the guy who's working in the field, it's his mazel that causes the field to go down, that causes the field not to produce? That's when it's him, when it's he's the one that's not producing. But if nobody's field is producing, then it's not his mazel, and therefore he's allowed to be menakem in chakuru, he's allowed to deduct from the payment. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im kibla hem. Rabbi Yehuda says, if the rental agreement was such that he wasn't paying in wheat, he wasn't paying by the bushel, he was paying in cash. He's paying $500 a month, $1,000 a month, whatever it might be. So then, since the rental payment is not tied into the field at all in terms of what the field produces, now again, chakirus, it's never really tied into what the field produces, but at least normally it's tied into at least something agricultural, because I'm going to pay him from the same item that the field produces. In the case where it's money, though, it's completely separate. I'm paying him something that has nothing to do with the field. I'm paying him cash. So then Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't care whether it's a makas medina or not a makas medina, you're not allowed to deduct from the payment. You have to pay exactly the cash that you're going to. Probably the svara for Rabbi Yehuda is, meaning l'chora, what's the svara? If the whole idea is that when I'm paying a rental payment and it's something that was totally unanticipated that everyone's being affected by, so I don't have to pay the full payment, why should it matter if it's money? Why should it make a difference? So the chor of the svar is that when I agree to pay, if I'm supposed to plant wheat in this field and I agree to pay with wheat, so it goes, it's unsaid, it's not stated in the agreement, but it's understood that I plan on being able to pay with wheat because I plan on this field producing a certain amount of wheat. So since the assumption is there, that's why when the field, and not of my own mazel, but the field is unable to produce that amount of wheat because of a makas medina, so then I'm allowed to deduct. But if I'm agreeing to pay cash, maybe I want to use the field as storage. Maybe I want to use the field for anything. It doesn't. Who knows what I want to use the field for? It's none of the. It's not the business of the owner, and nor is anything going understood or unstated that I'm supposed to use the field for anything. So then it doesn't make a difference. Makas medina, not makas medina. Eina manakala min chakuro. That is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Frak the Gemara hechi dami makas medina. What exactly is a makas medina? What does it mean that it's a communal plague? So Rabbi Yehuda could go into ishtuf ruba debaga, that most of the valley has been destroyed. The fields in most of the valley have been destroyed. Ula Amar Kagon Shenishtadfu Arba Sados Miyaburucha Seha. Ula says, no, it's a much more local. Medina is defined much more locally. If the four fields surrounding your field are all destroyed, so then it's a Makas Medina. But if it's just yours and the neighbors, but the other three neighbors are unaffected, so it's not going to be a Makas Medina. But if the four fields around yours are all destroyed, that's going to be Makas Medina. It doesn't even have to go any further than that. Just your immediate vicinity, your immediate neighborhood, is enough for it to be called a Makas Medina. Amr Ula, so it's going to be an interesting Amr Gemara. The Gemara is just going to ask question after question after question. It just poses tons of questions. Amr Ula, Bo b'marava, nishtaf telem echad al p'nei kula mai. What if one row on from the entire field, but the one row running the entire length of the field is destroyed? Then what's the din? Meaning, when we say that you have to have the four fields surrounding it all destroyed, does that mean all the fields, the entire field surrounding it destroyed, or even a single row from each field surrounding it? Meaning, does that mean that the four fields around you could not have gone unaffected? That as long as they were affected, that's called Makas Medina? Or do you say, no, it's not that they have to be affected, it's that they have to be utterly, completely destroyed. And being affected isn't enough. So if it's one row, or Nishtayir Telemechar Apnei Kulamahu, or if the reverse, meaning it's mostly destroyed, there just remains one row that's intact from each field. Do you say that that's called that it's not destroyed in such a case? If Sika Biramai, what if there's a field that's near yours that was left fallow, and then the next field after that is also destroyed? So is that called that the four fields around you are destroyed? The one next to you couldn't have been destroyed because there was nothing in it to destroy. It was fallow to begin with. So does that have a din as Makas Medina? That's what Rashi says. Ifsik biru sada bur hifsik ben ashtufos lazu. That there's this hefsik between the other destroyed fields and your field. Aspastamai. What if these fields that were around it were planted with shachas? They were planted with something that was used for machal behema, for like stubble that grows on the ground, and wasn't destroyed, but it wasn't a real field that was meant to produce viable food for human beings. And then the next field over was which was used to produce regular wheat and food for human beings, was completely destroyed. So is that called that the fields in your vicinity are destroyed? Zera acher mai. What if the field neighboring your field was planted with something else? It wasn't planted with the same item that you planted. You planted wheat. In that field was planted something else entirely. What's the din there? Chiti l'gabi sarim k'zara acher damri alo. And there's an imtim siloma that's unstated, right? If you're going to say that zera acher is considered to be not a makas medina because it's something else, my neighbor's not in the same boat as me, so how do we define zera acher? Are grains considered the same zera? Or do we say, no, chitim and sa'orim are two different types of grain, and therefore they're considered separate entities, and it would not be called a makas medina if my neighbor has chitim and I have sa'orim, or something like that. Or what if you want to say it's a Makas Medina, it's a plague that strikes everybody, but what if it's two different plagues? Everyone else's field was wind blasted. Mine turned colors. It turned the wrong color. It dried up and got messed up that way. It wasn't because of wind blasting. Inami kolam kolobi yirakon v'shalob shidafon mai, or the reverse. So teku. Gemara says on all these questions, presumably, it's a teku. How do you paskin on a teku? So it's a very complicated issue, exactly how to paskin on a teku. One rule that we do have when it comes to paskin on a teku, though, usually, is that whenever there's an imtim tzilomar, if you have a series of questions, and some of the questions assume an imtim tzilomar in a previous question, So we're going to paskin like that, imtim tzilomar. Now, interestingly, the Gemara never says imtim tzilomar over here, but it assumes imtim tzilomar at least twice. Right? The Gemara, if you look by Rashi, the second Rashi on the daf, zera acher mai, right? We said, what if the field next to mine is planted with something else? Says Rashi, if you're going to assume that when the field is planted with just stubble that the animals eat, that that's not called that it's mafsik, and therefore the next field over is considered to be a neighbor, because that's not included in the peranos, whatever punishment HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meeting out in the fields of tevua, that doesn't count. Maybe you could say, yeah, that field would have been destroyed too if only it had grain, because obviously this is a plague against grain. The question of Zera Acher is not the way we explained it at first, where the neighboring field has some other Zera and it also gets destroyed and we want to know if it's Makas Medina. No. It's I have wheat, my neighbor has barley, the barley does not get destroyed, the next neighbor over has wheat, and that does get destroyed, is that considered a Makas Medina? Because I can say, look, in all four directions, the next guy over who has the same thing that I have, who has wheat, also gets destroyed. They may not be my immediate neighbors, because my immediate neighbors may have something else planted there, so is that called a Hafsaka? But the point is, you see, that Rashi holds that there's an Imtim Tzilomar over here, that this question is totally on a previous question. So you think, who cares if it's an Imtim Tzilomar or not? Well, it matters La Halacha. If you assume it's an Imtim Tzilomar, that's how you would L'chora Paskin like Paskin Halacha. I did not take a look to see how the Rambam and whoever else and the Rishon and Paskin, but L'chora, that's normally the rule. Okay. Anyway, says the Gemara Vayter. Let's say the owner of the field says, okay, I want you to go plant this field with wheat, and he goes and he plants it with barley. Vishtadav ruba debaga, and most of the neighborhood was destroyed. Vishtadav nami hanach sari delay, and the barley field that I planted, which was supposed to have been planted with wheat, but I decided to make up my own mind and change from the deal that I had with the guy, so it was also destroyed. My, what's the din? Can I say to him, look, it doesn't make a difference. Everyone's fields are getting destroyed. Wheat fields, barley fields, doesn't matter. So if I would have planted my field, your field, with wheat the way you wanted me to, it also would have gotten destroyed. So either way, it's a Makas Medina. I'm allowed to be Menakel Min Chakuro. I can deduct from the rental payment because this was going to happen one way or the other. It wasn't going to make a difference whether it was wheat or barley. Oh, Dilma, or maybe no. Matzi Amalei, Ilu Zarata Chiti, had you planted it with wheat, have a Mekayim be, the Pasuk would have been Mekuyim in me, the Pasuk that says, V'sigzar Omer V'yakam Lach, would have been Mekuyim in me. What does that mean, V'sigzar Omer V'yakam Lach? If you look at Rashi, V'sigzar Omer, Masha Tevakish Min Hayotzer Ya'ase. What you ask from the Creator, from the Ribono Shalom, he'll do. V'ani lo bikashti min hashamayim b'tchilas hashana sheyatzlicheni b'sa'orim ela b'chitin. I never prayed to God that my wheat field should be okay because I didn't think I had any wheat fields. You were supposed to plant it with, I never prayed to God that my barley field should be okay because I never thought I had any barley fields. You were supposed to plant it with wheat, so I prayed constantly that my wheat field should be okay. And had you planted it with wheat, God was going to listen to my tefillah. So don't tell me everyone else's field. They don't daven like I daven. But the HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have listened to my tefillah had it been planted with the right thing. He didn't know what I was talking about because I'm talking about a wheat field. I don't even have a wheat field. Unbelievable, no? You see from here is how specific a tefillah has to be. That the more specific the tefillah, the more effective it is. Why didn't the guy just pray that his field should be okay? Apparently you're supposed to daven in a very specific way. Meshachachma on Chumash says that there's Meshachachma works very hard in a lot of places, much like the Netziv and the Ksava Kabbalah, number of Svarim, the Malbim, there are four major Svarim, I think those are the four major ones, that try to take Mamari Chazal, statements in the Gemara and the Medrash, and show you where it's rooted in Chumash. So where did the Gemara get this idea that you can say, well, I davened for that kind of field to be okay and not for that one, and therefore the tefillah was ineffective? So the Meshach Chachma points out in Chumash, when the Pasuk says that the Knanim came to the Yishma Kanani Melech Harad. So the Rashi and Chumash explains in Parshas Chukas, Yishma Kanani Melech Harad, he says, what do you mean? V'chi Kananim hayu? V'alo Amalekim hayu? They weren't Kananim, they were Amalekim. So the Rashi says, no, they were Amalekim, but they figured that the Klal Yisrael, if they attack, is going to start to pray, protect me from the Amalekim. And therefore, they came up with a chap. They'll dress like Kananim, they'll talk like Kananim, and then Klal Yisrael's tefillos are going to be, save me from the Kananim, not from the Amalekim. And Memela, it's going to turn out that the tefillos won't be listened to, because they're going to be davening to be saved from the Kananim, when in fact they're really Amalekim. And that was their chap. That's how they figured they were going to be able to attack Klal Yisrael. They were going to be able to affect Klal Yisrael. That's how Rashi says on Chumash. So says in Meshech Chachma, it's exactly like this Gemara. You see, since they're able to divert the tefillah, to make the tefillah on something that's not precisely what's the reality, so it's going to turn out that the tefillah is going to be ineffective. What this Gemara adds to that is that all we see from Chumash is that that was the cheshbon of the Amalekim. We don't know if theologically if we believe in that. Do we believe that that's really so? This Gemara says, yes, we do. Right? We do believe that that's really so, that if a tefillah is about something and you're off on the metzias in the tefillah, so then that's a reason for the tefillah maybe to not be listened to. So you see two yesodos. Number one, that a tefillah should try to be specific as possible in a tefillah, because apparently that makes for a more effective tefillah. And number two, I think that's quoted, by the way, in Poskim also, if I'm not mistaken, but that a tefillah, you should try to be as specific as possible. But number two, if you're not sure about certain details, then stay away from specificity in those cases. Then you should try to be more general if you're not sure about certain details, because you don't want to pray about the wrong thing. So that's the yesodos and tefillah that come out of this Gemara. So anyway, that's the shaila of the Gemara. Can the guy say, look, your field would have been ruined anyway? Or can the machkir say, no, I prayed for my wheat field to be okay. You went and you planted a barley. So of course my tefillahs weren't listened to. So Mestavra says, Gemara, Damalei, Yizrat Uchit, Yav Mekayim, Bivitik Zorma, V'yakom, Lach, Val, Dorachel, Nagar. He says it's Mestavra that the machkir is right, that he could say, my tefillahs would have been listened to had I only been praying for the right thing the whole time. And you went and you planted it with something else, ruined all my tefillahs. Nishtadvu kol sadosav shal machkir, vishtadvu nami haba adayu. What if all of the machkir's fields were destroyed, and this one was also destroyed? The neighborhood didn't take a hit. It wasn't something that was affecting everyone in town. It was affecting this guy. For some reason, wherever he owned the field, it got destroyed. My, what's the din in that case? Do we say, well, since it wasn't a communal plague, therefore you cannot deduct from the rent payment? Or maybe, no, the worker can say, look, no one else is affected, but every single one of your fields were affected. It's going to be tough to blame this on me. It's not my mazel because I'm working in the field that it was affected. It's obviously your mazel. All of your fields have been affected. So I should be able to deduct from the rental payment because it's obviously your mazel that's causing it. So Mistava Damalay Imushum Lasai Didi have a Mishtai Liporta. It's Mistava that he could tell him, no, if it were my luck, the Machir should be able to say to the Chocher that if it were my luck, I would have been left with something. There would have been something left. Kedichsiv Kinishanu Meat Meharbe. The Sma points out when HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves you with something. He doesn't punish you and leave you with absolutely nothing. He doesn't take away everything from you. So Nishanu Meat Meharbe, I would have been left with a little bit if it were my own mazel. It must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not punishing me with this. Me, the machkir, the bala sadeh, must be that he's punishing you, the cholcher, and therefore you're not allowed to be menaka from the rental payment. You have to pay me the full rental payment. What if you have the following? All of the fields of the cholcher and most of the neighborhood gets destroyed. Vishtadav Nami Habadayu, and this particular field is amongst those that are destroyed. My, what's the din? So again, when, generally speaking, when it's a neighborhood that's affected, so the Choker is allowed to say, I'm not paying you the full payment because it's not my fault, it's obviously not my mazel, it's the mazel of the neighborhood. But in this case, the Choker's, every field the Choker runs or owns is totally destroyed. So maybe the Machir can say, you're right, there's a communal plague over here, but I don't think this field being destroyed is a result of the communal plague, because there's a second plague over here. There's a plague on you. and I think this field is a result of the plague on you, and therefore you have to pay me full rent. Do we say that since most of the neighborhood has been destroyed, so you can deduct from the payment? Or maybe you could say, since all of your fields have been destroyed, this is obviously your bad luck, and therefore you need to pay me the full rental payment. So it's mistaver that he could tell the choker that it's his bad luck, and therefore he has to pay the full rental payment. Frankly, Gemara, wait a second. We just said a svara the exact opposite. Amai, hachanami neimalei, imi shem lasai didi, who have a mishayel iportad, have a mekayim biki nisharnu meat meharbe. Why can't the choker, the guy who's working on the field, tell the machkir, no, if it were my bad luck, something would have been left of it. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes, he leaves you with something, he doesn't leave you completely empty-handed. So if it were really a gzera on me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have left something. From the fact that nothing was left of it, must be that this is part of the communal gzera, and therefore I'm allowed to be menakeh, I'm allowed to deduct from the rental payment. So Mishum Damalei, Yav HaChazes, Shtayuri Lachmidi, Hav Mishtai Lachmidi Nafshah. No, because the Machir could say, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to leave you with something, he would not have left you with something from a field that I own. He would have left you something in a field that you own. He didn't leave you something in a field that you own. And this field was going to be destroyed as a result of the plague against you regardless. Don't say that if it were only for the plague against you, some of the field would have survived. Not so. This field would not have survived because this field isn't owned by you. You're just running it. You're just working in it. And therefore, it's not what would have made it. That's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have left you with. When he leaves you with a little bit of bracha, it's with bracha that belongs to you. That's personally yours. Meisvei. Ha'ishasna shidafon v'yirakon. If it was a year of shidafon v'yirakon, where all the fields are plagued, or oshvius, or a shemitah year, or Osha Yishanim Kishnei Eliyahu, it was years like the years of famine during the days of Eliyahu HaNavi, where it didn't rain for a while. Eino Olulam Min HaMinyan. So those years don't count toward the number. What number are we talking about? It says Rashi Shtei Shanim, the 2 years. What 2 years are we talking about? The halacha is that if you sell Stei Achuza, so there's a 2 year time period where you're not allowed to be pod to the field, where you're not allowed to redeem the field. So those 2 years are only years that the field can actually produce. If those are years of Shemitah or years where the field cannot produce because there's some sort of plague and none of the fields are producing, so it doesn't count toward the cheshbon of those 2 years. So Katani Shidafon V'Yirakon Dom Yudushanim Kishnei Eliyahu. But bottom line is, our focus is we put in the same category years of plagues of Shidafon V'Yirakon together with Shnei Eliyahu, with what happened during Eliyahu's time. Wait a second. Mashne Eliyahu Delavi Tavur Klal Av Hachinami Delavi Tavur Klal. The implication is that the definition of plague has to live up to the standards of what happened during Eliyahu's time. Well, during Eliyahu's time, there was nothing. There was no grain at all. So maybe the definition of Shidafon V'Yirakon is where there's nothing, where you're left with absolutely zero. But maybe when there is some grain, that's called that there's something. And we don't call that a makas medina. We don't call that a worldwide plague or a nationwide plague. And therefore, it would count toward the 2 years when it comes to being goel stei achuza. But just like it would count toward the 2 years when it comes to being goel stei achuza, because we don't call it a makas medina, for our purposes also, when it comes to deducting rental payment, when you're a choker machkir, it should also not count as a makas medina, unless it affects everybody. So we're going back to our very definition. We said, what is a makas medina? Either rove of the valley or the four neighboring fields. Says Gemara, no. The definition of makas medina is it affects every single person. It has to be that there's nothing that exists. There's no grain anywhere. Isn't that the definition of makas medina? So Rav Nachum Yitzchak Shaini Hasam Dama Krav Mispar Shnei Tvos Yimachalach Shadim Sheish Ben Tvo Biolam. No, it's Tafka Din by Stei Achuza, that the pasuk goes out of its way to make it evident that what we're looking at is there any grain in the world? It has to be a year of grain. Whereas over here, we're looking at whether this is a personal plague or a more communal plague, not whether there's any grain in the world. So you can't compare the two dinim. But wait a second. If this is our definition, then Shemitah should count as well. If you're going to say that the definition of a plague is Kishnas Eliyahu, right, is like that there's nothing left, that there's nothing anywhere, So then Shemitah should not count as a year where there's nothing, because there's plenty of grain available in Chutz La'aretz. There's no din of Shemitah in Chutz La'aretz. So Amalei, of Shemitah's Karka. So Amalei, Shviyas of Ka'asa de Malkihi. Says, no, Shemitah is considered communal because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has demanded it. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been Mevatalas from being Zareya, the fields during Shemitah, and therefore it's as if it doesn't exist, as if the field is not available, it's totally off limits, and therefore that year can't count toward the 2 years of the Stei Achuza. The halacha is that when you're makdish your field and you want to be poda the field, so you're poda based on how many years there are left till Yovel, right? Meaning if the field cost $50, right after the previous Yovel, so you assume it's $1 per year. So when you're poda it in the 25th year, you pay $25. But included in the cheshbon are Shemitah years. We count Shemitah years as being worth something in that cheshbon. But if you're going to say that Shemitah doesn't count as anything, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes there, it's off limits, the field doesn't exist for these years, because you're not allowed to work on it. Well, if that's the case, then why does it exist in terms of the cheshbon of figuring out how many years you have left till Yovel and how much the price for the pidyon should be? So answers Gemara, Amalei Shaini Hasam Dechazel Lemishtcha Bapiri. Says no, the field's still usable during the Shemitah year. You're just not allowed to plant it. So when we're talking about using the field to plant, so then it's off limits; it doesn't exist. But when we're talking about using the field just to storage, to leave stuff there, to lay out your fruits there to dry or whatever, so that's perfectly fine. That's a normal usage of the field, and that's an appropriate usage of the field during Shemitah. And as such, the Shemitah years are going to count for those purposes. Amar Shmuel lo shanu, lo shanu what? Meaning Shmuel is going back on something that we had previously said. So Rashi says, lo shanu makas medini hi menakulo. This whole din, that if it's a communal plague that you're allowed to deduct from your rental payment, so Shmuel's mechadesh, lo shanu el shazara v'tzam chava achlechagav. That's if you worked it, you planted, it sprouted, and then it got eaten up by all the locusts. Then it got destroyed. But if you never worked it in the first place, you can't say, oh, Makas Medina, not my fault. Everyone's fields are being destroyed, so your field was destroyed with it. I'm going to deduct from the rental payment. Damerlei, because the owner could say to him, look, Ilu Zerata, had you just gotten off your tuchus and planted that field, have a Makayim be, v'lo yav shube Yisrael, b'mei rav on Yisbu'u. It would have been Makuyim in me that nothing would have happened to my field. Meaning, the reason nothing came out of my field wasn't because of a plague, it was because you didn't do anything to it. But had you done something for it, then maybe my field would have been different. Let's say you have a shepherd who was shepherding the sheep, and he left the flock outside, and he went into the city. And then a wolf comes and attacks the flock of sheep, or a lion comes and attacks the flock of sheep. Right, the wolf is taraf, the ari is daras, that we discussed in the past, what the difference between taraf and daras, whether it consumes it on the spot or pulls it away to somewhere else, whatever it is. We don't say, well, you know, if the shepherd was there, maybe he could have defeated the lion with his bare hands. Maybe he would have been able to beat up the lion. Rather, we try to estimate if he's able to, if it's a type of attack that a shepherd could normally ward off, so then the guy is going to be chayiv, because he wasn't there with the sheep when they were attacked in a way that he could have saved them. But if he would not have been able to ward off the attack anyway, so he's going to be pater, because he's going to say, yeah, I'll tell you what, if the lion would have come attacking while I was there, I would have hid under the closest rock. There wasn't going to be anything happening anyway. The lion was going to do its business, whatever it wanted to do. I would have been nowhere to be seen. So frankly, but based on what we just said, why should that be so? Why don't we say, well, who knows? Maybe if you were there, Nisan would have happened for me. Maybe if you would have been there, you would have had these supernatural powers, you would have been able to beat up the lion. Why don't we ask this on what we said earlier, that when there's an Ari and a Dove that attacks, we consider that a total onus. Why do we say that's a total onus? Maybe the owner could taina, what do you mean it's an onus? Had you stood up to them, who knows, maybe miracles would have happened. No, in that case, you were there. you were a shomer, and you were there watching, and the lion came, and you didn't feel like the Incredible Hulk. You didn't notice that your muscles were getting bigger, and that you were going to be able to beat up the lion. So then, in Yochalomadav Mekayimbe, so the guy can't say, you should have tried. You should have tried to beat up the lion. No, you're nuts. I'm not going to try. I didn't feel anything different about myself. Why would I try to beat up a lion? But over here, you weren't even there. So you can say, you know what? Maybe if you were there, you would have been blessed with superpowers at that time, and you would have been able to beat up the lion. Who knows? Maybe if you were there, you would have had such an ability. Anyway, so answers the Gemara, Mishum Damla, Yavis Chazis L'Shrachush L'Achnisa, Havis Shrachush L'Achnisa, Krabi Chanin Medosa, Damasin, Izi Dovi, B'Karnayu. So you know what? If a nace would have happened for you, you know what kind of nace would have happened for you? HaKadosh Baruch would have made a nace like the kind that happened to Rabbi Chanin Mendoza. When Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was in an argument with other people, and he said, "If I'm right, then the goats should come. My goats should come back with bears on their horns. They should be able to beat up bears and kill bears and have bears on their horns." And in fact, they did come back like that. So you see, such a miracle could happen where nature is reversed, where the weaker animal is able to beat up is able to kill the much stronger animal that's normally no match for it. He's able to kill the much stronger animal. So the guy can say, "Look. If a nace was going to happen for you, it wasn't going to happen by me beating up the animal. It would have happened by the animals beating each other up." So it says in Marvel, Neimele, Nehidil, Lenisa, Rabbalav, Chazina, Lenisa, Zuta, Chazina. Why can't he say back to him, "No, that kind of miracle, come on, what kind of tzaddik do you think I am? I'm not Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. A miracle like that wasn't going to happen to me. But who knows, maybe a smaller miracle could have happened to me." So for that, he could have said... He could have maybe been zocha to. So the Gemara leaves it as a kasha. The Gemara says it's left unanswered. The Chachmas Menachov here asks, why didn't a nace like this happen to David HaMelech like happened to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa? Why did David HaMelech have to beat up a lion with his own hands? Right? We say it's a greater nace, it's a better nace to have the animal beat each other up, right? If David was a shepherd, let his own sheep beat up the lion. Why did David have to beat up a lion? Why did David have to kill a lion? So the Chachos Menach points out that no, this is the Yad Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to prepare David for Gvura, for being a warrior. And David was a great warrior. So in order to prepare him, he had to see that with his own hands, he's able to accomplish unbelievable things. And also, when David's going to go fight Goliath, and everyone looks at him and says, and David's like, "Hey, what's," he's a little kid, goes out to the battlefield, says, "Hey, what's going on out here?" And they say, "Oh, this big giant is challenging anyone to a fight, and everyone's afraid, no one knows who's going to fight him." So David, the little kid, says, I'll take a shot at him. So everyone laughs at him. "Who do you think you are? You'll take a shot. You're here to bring gittin from your brothers back to their wives. Do your message, you know, do what your shlichus and get out of here. What are you talking about? You're going to fight him." But he says, "Well, you know, I was able to beat up a lion." "What? You were able to beat up a lion?" And so that experience enabled him to be able to fight Goliath. It empowered him to be able to fight Goliath and to not look like a lunatic for fighting Goliath. And that's what obviously led to his rise to power. Okay, anyway, says in Gemara, Tani Chada, Parmishan of Shnei Zoru Shlisha, Sein Nozora. You have to plant it. If you plant it the first time and then it gets eaten by locusts or gets wind blasted, and then the second time, and then you don't have to plant it the third time, right? But if you don't plant it the first and second time, even if it's a Makas Medina, you can't say, "I'm not paying my full rental payment." You have to at least give it a couple of shots. The Tanya Idach, but third, another Brisa says, Shlishes or Revias Eino Zara. No, you even have to plant it a third time, just not a fourth time. Says Gemara Lokasha, HaKarabi HaKarabin Shem Gamliel. This is subject to the Machlokas, Rabbi Rabbi Shem Gamliel, about how many times it takes to establish a Chazaka. HaKarabi Damar betrays him, Niavi Chazaka. HaKarabi Shem Gamliel, Damar betrays him, Niavi Chazaka. This one, if you assume that two times is a Chazaka, like Rebbe, then you're going to assume that you're not going to have to try a third time, that once you try twice and it got destroyed, it's a chazaka that it's going to be destroyed. If you assume like Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, it takes three times to establish a chazaka, so if you tried three times and it got destroyed, you don't have to plant again, but two times is not enough. How do we paskin? How many times does it take to create a chazaka? So it's Magal Bepume, we always say, the Bepume Dinshi, people always say, three times is a chazaka. It's not always true. Most of the time we paskin three times as a chazaka. When it comes to issues of sakana, we paskin two times as a chazaka. For instance, an isha katlanis, right? That's where the source of the machlokas is. If a woman was married twice and both husbands died, so we assume so according to Rebbe, you have a chazaka that there's something wrong with her, that when someone marries her, they're going to die. So if you have such a chazaka, she can't get married again. But according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's only three times it's a chazaka, so you can still get married. So we don't take chances on things like that. things that are sakana. Now, again, katanis doesn't mean that the husband, died when he was 98 years old or something like that. You know, the katanis would have to mean that he died in some way, although it's a machlokes in the Gemara, whether it's an issue of mazel or whether it's a physical, we assume that she passes on some sort of physical illness, some sort of STD that's passed on to him that causes him to die. So if you assume the latter, so then if he gets hit by a truck, so that's also not a katlanis. It would have to be that he dies from some sort of disease. But anyway, so when it comes to sakana issues, well, let's say mila, mesuach of machmas mila, woman has two baby boys and they both die because of a mila. So you're not going to do a mila on the third boy, because that's again an issue of sakana. But generally speaking, when it's not sakana, we assume three times. That's only if you planted it, it sprouted, and then it got eaten. But if it never sprouted, never had a chance to sprout, so the balakar can say, so long as it's still planting season, you should keep on planting. Until what point? Until a certain time of the year, this is an astrological comment, when the muzzle of Tleh has the tail by the head, by right over their heads or something, so it's some particular time of year. We're going to divide the year into six parts, six tkufos, six seasons. So half a Tishrei Marcheshvan and half a Kislev is Zera. Chatzi Kislev Tevis, Chatzi Shvat, Choref. Chatzi Shvat Adar v'chatzi Nisan, Kur. Chatzi Nisan Ir v'chatzi Sivan, Katzir. These are names of seasons based on what happens agriculturally during those seasons. Chatzi Sivan Tammuz v'chatzi Av, Kayetz. Chatzi Av, Elul, v'chatzi Tishrei, the tkufos we're in right now, Chom, is heat. Rabbi Yehuda mona mi Tishrei, Rabbi Shimon mona mi Marcheshvan. So Rabbi Yehuda starts counting from Tishrei, Rabbi Shimon starts counting from Marcheshvan. Man mekel bekulhu, Rabbi Shimon. Who's the most mekel of all them in terms of as far as how late the Zera season goes? It's Rabbi Shimon. V'kulei hai lo kamar, but even he doesn't go as far as what we just said in terms of when the mazel of the Tleh, even he doesn't go that late. So lo kasha, had the kibbutz mina b'charfi, had the kibbutz mina ba'afli. It depends when if you were makabel the field initially. It depends when you were makabel the field initially. What you were makabel it for? If you were makabel it for things that are supposed to be planted b'charfi, or if you were makabel for things that were supposed to be planted in Adar at a later time. So that's how depending on what you were makabel the field to plant, that's how late it's going to go. That we're going to assume you still have to keep on planting it and you can't give up. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda says if you're mekabel money to pay money as rent and not produce as rent, so then we're going to say that we don't care if it's a makas medina, you're still going to have to pay the full rental. So what happened was he was mekabel a field to plant right by a river, and he was going to pay a monetary rental payment, and the river overflowed and destroyed everything. So asal kamed Rava, they went to Rava. Amalei narmalka sava lo ava demiskar makas medinahi. Rava says this is an unusual occurrence. This is obviously a communal plague, and therefore zil nachile. And therefore you have to deduct from the rental payment because it's a communal plague. It's not a personal plague. Amalei rabbanon the Rava, but the rabbanon said to Rava, anantran Rabbi Yudomirim kiblei menu b'maus bein kacha bein kacha inu menakalo menachakuro. But didn't we learn in the Mishnah that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the agreement was to pay in cash, then I don't care if it's a makas medina. You're still going to have to pay the full rental payment. No, when no one's choshish for Rabbi Yehuda. We don't paskan like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore, if it's a makas medina, you can deduct from the rental payment, even if the agreement was to pay in cash. We paskan like the Tanakama. Okay, we'll pick up from that Mishnah tomorrow. Okay.